The only person with you all your life is you. Your parents die. Things inside you die. Illusions. Gushes of personality. Only you can sort yourself out. Yourself may not be all you need, but all you've got. So I really love that quote. I'm like, it's very, just so wise. And it really applies to this song because in the end, all the speaker has is himself.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily Link, and this week we're going to be talking about a track from Kate Bush's second album, Lionheart. Wow.
Ooh, yeah, you're amazing. We think you're incredible. You say we're fantastic, but still we don't have the boo.
Unbelievable.
It is so unbelievable. And by the way, I have a guest talking with me this week about this wonderful song, this very wow, unbelievable song. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
All right. I'm Zoe P. I have a last name, but I'm mysterious like Kate Bush. So you know how it is.
Yeah. So I just call you Zoe P.
So we're calling you Zoe P. I don't want to be braggy, but I would say I might be her biggest fan on the planet. I'm not actually braggy because I'm not proud of it. Like, I am embarrassed by how obsessed I am. Like, it is not, it's not something I'm proud of. But I spoke on the Introduction to Lionheart episode. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of this album because I think that it is so explicitly theatrical and hyper feminine and over the top, and then there's a lot of implicit queerness and the fluidity of identity that it just freaks the hell out of straight male music critics and has always been called her worst album. And in my queer opinion, it is not.
No, it's
so
not.
So I am here to rehabilitate Lionheart, and Wow is an interesting one to talk about because it get more acclaim than the other songs mm-hmm. on the album. Like, people always be like, oh yeah, Wow, and then the rest of Lionheart, like whatever.
Yeah.
But Wow it's a beautiful, amazing song. And as you saw earlier, anytime anyone ever says the word wow, in my head I'm just like,
yes. And I'm doing the arm motions too.
I know, right? I can't not do, like, if someone says wow, I will literally just like if I'm texting a friend, they say wow, I'll just write all caps. Unbelievable. Like the ones who get the reference, which is very few, but yeah.
But that's okay. Those people will eventually get the reference because they'll hear it from us enough.
Yeah.
They'll go, oh yeah, that's exactly. That Kate thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, story behind the song here. So, Wow. Pretty much her biggest hit, really, from this album, because it reached number 14. And it was the second and final single. And the first single, I believe, was Hammer Horror.
Yes. Which is a fascinating choice for a first single. But
oh, seriously.
On the Hammer Horror episode. Like,
yeah.
That is my favorite song on the album. But not a good single choice.
Pretty much. So this was included on her second album and apparently was written before The Kick Inside and was actually considered for inclusion on The Kick Inside. How do you feel about that? How do you think that would have worked?
I don't know. I have very strong opinions that The Kick Inside should not have had Room for the Life. And I also, I mean, I'll get hate for this, not a big fan of them heavy people either. So she has some demos, like, for example, Frightened Eyes, I think, is one of her best songs of all time, like, recorded and demos. Something. So in terms of how this would have fit in the Kick Inside, I'm like, sure, put it in instead of Room for the Life of Them Heavy People. You know, like, but it would have been, but it worked better on Lionheart because this album is more theatrical and this is the camp, this is her super, super campy album. This is the one for the gays. I say that as a gay. like, this is the one, this is the album she made for us, even though she didn't mean to. Whereas the Kick Inside is more about bodies. This is more about atmosphere.
Yeah, and definitely, like, this was her attempt to write a Pink Floyd Spacey song, which I can kind of see. Like, I'm not terribly familiar with a ton of Pink Floyd other than the stuff that I hear on classic rock radio, like when my parents had it on. But I can see that, and especially, like, I love the synthesizer riff at the beginning because, you know, me being a music nerd, I like that it begins, the whole song is in A minor, which is one of my favorite music keys. Like, there's this moodiness to A minor, and it's actually an A9 chord that she's using. So she's doing, like, an A minor, A, C, E, like you usually would, but then she includes the ninth note of the A minor scale, which is B. And so that riff is actually going that between those, like, going along that A9 chord, and there's a little bit of tension because usually, like, in pop music, you got your, like, your minor and your major chords, and you don't, like, add extra notes to them, like seventh chords and stuff like that. Instead, she's using this chord, and it feels like there's already a little bit of tension there, which I think fits well for what the song is about, which is, you know, show business and pretty much, like, the sometimes the BS of it.
Yeah, you're the person who knows that. Like, you're the music nerd. I'm, like, the literary citizen nerd. That's interesting because, like, for me, as someone who's not a music nerd, I watched once fairly recently, actually, it was a video called, like, The Vocal Range of Kate Bush. And it, like, there's actually a few, but what it does is it shows how, like, every chord that she hits in her voice or every, like, note, like, and she'll go from, like, one to a completely different other one within, like, two syllables.
Yeah, she's got she leaps around a lot in her songs.
Like, her voice is an instrument, and she'll go from, like, A to G in, like, the span of 10 seconds with her, like, vocally. And I love that about this album so much. And her early work. And something on her early work, too, she does it, I don't know if she does it as much in this song, but she does it a lot on all of the Kick Inside and Lionheart and Never Forever and The Dream. Well, actually, her whole career, she doesn't ever have backup singers. She only has herself. So what's really interesting is that for example, on L'Amour Looks Something Like You from the Kick Inside, the background vocals are singing their whole other song. They're, like, singing their whole thing. And you'll see also in Kafka from Baghdad, they do some, her voice vocally is so all over the place that for a lot of critics, they say, oh, she's just so all over the place. She's trying to find her voice. She doesn't know what she's doing. To me, I'm like, that is her voice.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just something that doesn't work for you because you like something more traditional.
Yeah. We have not actually gotten to any of my top 10 favorite Kate songs, and this is a top 10!
Yay!
So, I'm going to have a lot to say. This is going to be a really cool episode, because, like, I have so much to say about this song, as I will with all the top 10. So I am so excited to talk about this song, because we finally gotten to one of my absolute favorites. It's not to say that I don't like anything from the Kick Inside, because I mean, I like most of the album except for, you know, Room for the Life. But this is a top yeah. 10. This is one of my absolute favorites. I've loved it since day one. I really have. When I first listened to the whole story, because that was my first exposure to like listening to more than one Kate song at a time, and it's not all flashback alternatives, this mm-hmm. one stood out to me. When I first watched the live version from Live at the Hammersmith Odeon, my mom, she kind of came in the room and she saw the routine, what she was doing in her singing. And my mom said, she kind of reminds me of Sarah Brightman. And
she's so theatrical.
Yeah, she's very theatrical like Sarah. And some of the high pitched vocal is
operatic.
Definitely,
yeah,
it's kind of operatic like Sarah, what she does. Mm-hmm. Like many of the other songs on this album, it sounds like something from a musical.
Most of her songs do, period.
Yeah, like because she's I using think. Her voice to go up and down with the emotions of the singer, and that's a very mm-hmm. musical theater thing to do. Like when I took voice lessons as a 16-year-old, we were singing a lot of musical theater songs, and the feel of them was very different from a pop song. And like
totally,
definitely, like I love the arm movements too. I know some people kind of poke fun, like, "Oh, hey, she's doing the arm thing." I like it.
It's good stretch.
It really, yes, it is. In fact, I'm doing it right now as I'm speaking. Like, whee!
But yes, interesting because like what you were saying about like it could be a musical theater song. That's what makes her. I think the majority of her songs are that way. They sound like self-contained stories of like something that would just happen. Like they only mm-hmm. make sense within the context of a story. Therefore, they're really more musical theater songs than pop songs, and that's why I find it so interesting that her American fan base tends to be like more in the like, I hate this word, but like edgy side, because I'm like, this is musical theater nerdiness, you guys. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, I loved musical theater as a kid, and it's like whenever I listen to any of her songs, it's like, yeah, this could be, this sounds like a moment a character is having at a certain point, as opposed to this is a pop song. Like let's say like Infant Kiss, like that is something that from Never Forever, that's something that is like part of a character arc and not just a pop song.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. I like that this is another one of her story songs. I mean, this whole album is like,
I mean,
self-contained stories. Yeah. She's,
I mean, I can count the number on my hands of ones that like aren't story songs. Like there's like a few on like the Red Shoes and that's like it. For me, what's interesting about Wow, and actually with pretty much all her songs, is that when I first saw it, was watching the music video, not the live version, but like the official music video. So the two are really inextricably linked for me. Mm-hmm. Like I can't hear the song without watching the video in my head. And let's be honest, doing the dance in my head myself too, and if it's just been a few drinks in, doing it for real. and so like, so the first thing I thought when I saw this video, and the other ones, is like, this is so ridiculous, but like, this is my kind of ridiculous because she's so earnest. It's not like Lady Gaga, who's making like very, I respect Lady Gaga. I think she's very talented. She does make pretty average pop music and then just like has a weird image. Like with Kate, it's just like, she says so often that her dance routines are supposed to be manifestations of the meanings of the song. And I'm like, okay, like that is, like if these weird wild movements feel like the manifestation of the spirit of the song to you, that is great and you are a freak and that's awesome. I like this routine, as I really think in this video, if you watch the official music video, she's basically a drag queen in it, and I say that as a compliment. Like she is, because like, you know, the whole Beyonce, I am Sasha Fierce thing, like how Beyonce says, like, I get on stage and become Sasha Fierce. Like Kate Bush was, again, another thing she started. She was like the original of that. She gets on stage, she performs, and she becomes someone else entirely. And that someone else is completely campy. It's like, you can't even like, I've seen some Kate Bush parodies, but you can't even really parody her because she is like a self parody. Like she is so over the top, especially in the Wow video, like her facial expressions, you can't get more over the top than she already is. You can't parody it because it already is camp. And that's what camp is. And camp is queer.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the music video. So apparently there were two music videos though for this song. Cause there's the one that you and I have seen with the routine. And then also like, but also I think what's really interesting, there was this behind the scenes documentary for musical Chairs. It was a BBC thing. Have you seen that video where they're showing like the behind the scenes of it?
Yes. And the reason why that was made is, basically they had the official music video, and they had like when she had her in 1983, video compilation of like all her music videos up to that point came out. And might have been 83 or 84. I can't remember which one. And so on that one, they included, instead of like the regular Wow official music video, they included like all the clips from the Tour of Life set to Wow. And apparently a big reason for that was because of the booty, of the anal sex part. As we will explore later in this episode, she has a line that is explicitly about anal sex. And if it wasn't clear enough, she pats her butt while singing it. And apparently they were just like, no.
That makes sense why there's two separate videos. Because that second video where it's just clips of her on the Tour of Life, I mean, yay, it's neat to see her doing stuff live, but it just feels like random clips thrown together.
Like, absolutely. And the video is just, and the original is just pure drag queen perfection.
Mm-hmm. And I love like in that behind the scenes video when they were showing like her, that she was going to be flying around a little bit. Like they had her like raised up on wires. And so when they got to the wow, wow, wow part, that they turned on all the lights and had her doing the arm movements. I wish that there was more footage of her doing her behind the scenes of her videos. Cause I like seeing,
I love that behind the scenes video. I think if you look up on YouTube, it's called like Musical Chairs behind, just like if you Google behind the scenes, wow video, you'll find it. But she is so great because she's just like a 19-year-old. Like you're just watching it and you're like, okay. Like in the video, she's, as I said, full on drag queen, like high priestess of camp, like wild. And then she's just talking and like smoking a cigarette and like totally normal teenager. And I love that contrast.
Well, I think that some of like with that contrast you were talking about, I mean, growing up, she went to a very conservative Catholic school, and then she would come home and her parents would be like, her brother would be writing erotic poetry, and they'd be, and so like they had, she was already grew up with the like being able to kind of, I guess, almost compartmentalize some of her emotions. And so I think that like that's why like she continued, like she would go, like turn on, as soon as the cameras are on, she's doing this like wild theatrical stuff, and then when the camera's off, she's like, okay, cool, yeah, I'm gonna go, you know, smoke my cigarette here, you know.
Well, if it's a cigarette, you know.
Yeah, if it is. Although I think in that video, it's in actually that video, one of the few instances where you actually see her smoking.
It's so funny too, because she would smoke like apparently like a pack a day, or like, well, as you can tell from how she sounds now.
Oh yeah, because her voice is so deep. And so I mean
I would never guess in a million years if you said who is, I would never know that was Kate Bush singing if like you compared, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah,
we'd like to tell you about a young man called Keith McMillan who makes video promotions for groups and singers. We filmed him in the chilly surroundings of Wilton's Music Hall in the East End of London. Keith McMillan was working with Kate Bush. He's also worked with Blondie, David Essex, ABBA, and countless others. But he and Kate Bush get on particularly well together. When we arrived, Keith McMillan was stringing her up for a new sequence for Wow, her new single. Kate told us how they set to work inventing a new video promotion.
Well, normally I have a routine that I work out, like I sort of form a character, if you like, for that particular song. And then we'll always get together like a week before we film and just sit and chat, and he comes up with ideas and I do. And we just work together, and he's just so inspiring. He's great.
Okay, roll it, Brookie.
I started in the business as a photographer and sleeve designer. From about 1968, I used to photograph and design album sleeve covers, and I did that for 7 or 8 years. I got a bit fed up doing that because I'd done basically over 1,000 by then, and I was just basically a little bored with it, and really thought that the up-and-coming thing was film and specifically videotape for the music business.
So the lyrics of this song, I love that. Yeah, I know a lot of people probably kind of dismiss it like, oh, well, that's that song where she's just saying, wow, unbelievable in the chorus. Whatever. What I love is that the meaning changes throughout the song.
Yeah. Yeah. Also with wow, something I meant to point out earlier, which I didn't, is that she was notorious in the media and with friends. Like if you read the Graham Thompson biography, mm-hmm. Under the Ivy, for constantly saying wow. She always would say wow, amazing. Like she was a stoned teenager and would just always be like, what? She like, so it was funny. I remember like there was some anecdote of like someone saying, oh yeah, that makes sense that she's the girl who sings that wow song because she says wow every 10 minutes.
Maybe she's just really enthusiastic. I can relate to that because I'm super enthusiastic.
Yeah. But so she's just very endearing.
And I love how I see here in your notes that like the way she sings the word changes. Like that mm-hmm. she's going from the wow where she's on C there and then suddenly dipping an octave lower and then going back up.
Yeah, at the very end, like after kind of the whole letdown where the protagonist or the person she's talking about learns that they'll never make the screen, they'll never be that movie queen. She goes, wow, wow, wow. You know, it's not high anymore. It's also going down. I think that signifies a change in meaning.
She's kind of starting off the song like, whoa, I'm getting now into show business. This is so awesome. Yay. You know, I'm auditioning. And, you know, I just really, really hope I get it. And suddenly I'm thinking of a chorus line.
Yeah.
There's a line, a song about, you know, I hope I get it. Like you've got this initial excitement though, oh wow, this is awesome, and then you get to like the verse about, oh, he'll never make the Sweeney or be that movie queen. It's like, oh well, I've worked my butt off and
many
aren't quite working up.
It's interesting that it's third person though too. It's like mm-hmm. she's speaking from a very omniscient point of view, and also in the video, I wish this could be like a video podcast. Just her mm-hmm. visuals are so tied to the songs, but in the video, I feel like the facial expressions that she makes and the gestures she makes are commenting on the lyrics rather than acting out the lyrics. If that makes sense, mm-hmm. Like you know, she'll like put. She'll put like the two kind of like a gun to her head, so like nervous to kind of signify what the character is going through, and you know she pats her butt on the he's too busy hitting the Vaseline, wink wink, kind of thing, as a commentary, as opposed to in other videos where she is actually playing the character. Like here, she's almost this omniscient, like third person perspective. It's like on her other songs, she'll use first person and be embodying other characters. But here, she's just commenting on them. And it's like, who is this person who is commenting on them? Like the speaker is unclear.
And I'm thinking that it's third person, and it's probably talking about just a guy. It's just a guy trying to break it into show business, and that he's trying his hardest, and he's not even good enough to make a popular detective series of the 70s.
But it's also his own fault because he's too busy hitting the Vaseline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she's sending up kind of, it's interesting because she has said about herself, I was just rewatching my favorite interview with her, which is Profiles in Rock from 1980. She's very stoned in the interview. And she's like, death is the best thing that'll ever happen to you. It's so cute. But she talks about, like, she's like, I have a laziness that I try to overcome. So it's interesting to see that kind of reflected here almost. Like she's saying, like, they're trying, but there are humans, so they fail. I don't know. Like he's too busy hitting Vaseline for those of you who are not in the know. That is a reference to receiving anal sex. And mm-hmm. the character is a male in the theater world, so probably from another male.
Yep.
This guy is too busy getting it on to really devote himself to his career.
Yeah.
And so that's also part of it. It's like self-sabotage too. Like mm-hmm. the industry is shallow, but so is the character.
Yeah. And that's why after that, oh yeah, you're amazing. We think you're really cool. We'd give you mm-hmm. a part, my love, but you'd have to play the fool. They're going, yeah, we think you're pretty cool, but mm-hmm. well, you're
and
just...
That, yeah, and that's the line where she puts the gun to her mm-hmm. head in the video using her fingers.
Oh yeah, you're amazing. We think you are really cool. We give you a part, my love, but you'd have to play the fool.
How do you interpret that with her putting the gun to her head?
I've thought about that a lot over the years. I feel like it's kind of this, she's saying, like, kind of, this is all you got, industry death. But it's, again, it's like her, she's not even saying, like, she's not acting out the character. She's expressing kind of what it means. I've always thought that move was interesting. And she doesn't do it in all of the live performances. I find this song really interesting because she's singing about show business. She's said openly this is what it's about. But as we talked about kind of before we started this episode, she's really also sending up the bullshit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the speaker, so the song starts, we're all alone on the stage tonight. And that's filled with possibility. It's we're all alone on the stage. You know, it's like an audition. Something is coming, something exciting. We've been told we're not afraid of you. We know all our lines so well. We've said them so many times, time and time again, line and line again. It's like you're rehearsing for this audition. And then, oh yeah, you're amazing. Those are the people you're auditioning for telling mm-hmm. you what they think. But still, you know, but still, even though they're told they're fantastic, they don't head the bill.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you know, they don't make it. They have to play the fool. And it ends, we're all alone on the stage tonight. And so it mm-hmm. reminds me of this quote that she said at age like 20. And I'm like, how are you 20? And you're saying the most profound thing I've ever read, where she said, she said this in 1978. Oh, so she wasn't 20. She was 19. And she said this at 19. The only person with you all your life is you. Your parents die. Things inside you die. Illusions. Gushes of personality. Only you can sort yourself out. Yourself may not be all you need, but all you've got. So I really love that quote. I'm like, it's very, just so wise. And it really applies to the song, because in the end, all the speaker has is himself. There's all the bullshit and glamour of show business evaporates, and you're all alone on the stage tonight.
Mm-hmm. And also, you've got another quote here too, that I guess this is from Kate as well. She says, the music industry is in such poor shape. It's in a really bad way, and a lot of people in the industry are very depressed.
Yeah, she always says, like, oh yeah, here we go. Here's a quote. She said, well, I don't go to parties very often, or only if I'm invited, or if I've got time, or there's someone there I want to meet. Often I don't like the hype of the situation, and that worries me a lot. But there's a drag that it always has to be a poor situation. And one interviewer said, no party animal. The singer also enjoys asking friends around to dinner or maybe going to theater with them. I love being with my friends, relaxing and talking, she says. Then Del, who was Del Palmer, her engineer and boyfriend for 15 years, she says, at home, Del and I just potter about being ordinary Mr. and Mrs. Boring. We give cuddles and have rows, all that. So she, even though she's a music industry insider who was on the top of the charts of Britain, she's also an outsider. And that comes across very strongly on Wow, I think, because she still sees it's still like this mysterious, glamorous thing, even though she's in it. But she also is cynical towards it. And that cynicism kind of seems to go hand in hand with her not wanting to be a part of the music scene. I mean, like, we've alluded to her stoner-ness before, but when you think about that time period, everyone was like on coke and doing much harder stuff.
Oh,
like, it's positively quaint that she had a weed habit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she just wanted to write her songs, put them out in the world, and go home and watch movies, like she says in like every interview. And that, I think that comes across in this song.
Well, and she's always, especially when you listen to some of, it's not just songs like these, but like we talked about earlier with Frightened Eyes, and other such songs where she's an observer. And I'm a fellow introvert, and I totally get it. Like, I feel like I love people watching. I, like with Kate, like, Kate has talked about how people are just fascinating and they're full of stories. I totally get that.
And they're her main inspiration, yeah.
And, like, I love, one of my favorite things to do, my husband and I, is to just, like, people watch. And especially in like particular, like if we're out at a concert, like it was really fun to people watch at the Tori Amos concert.
I bet people watching at Night of Thousand Stevies is a yearly like Drag Queen Stevie Nicks party. That's the best people watching. The best.
And so I totally get, and you know, I'm not a party girl either. I'm like, you know what, Kate? I totally get my favorite Saturday night is sitting at home, maybe reading, or I'll be playing a video game. I'm not out at the club, yo, or anything like that.
Well, you and her get along.
Mm-hmm. But also, like, since she's an observer, like, where we're talking about, like, the show business and the bullshit of it, that, like, in the line, when the actor reaches his death, you know it's not for real, he just holds his breath. Like, that's, like, talk about the facades, like people telling you, oh yeah, you're great, oh honey, yeah, artifice. Yeah, you'll have, I'll call you, it's really awesome, and then they never call you.
I also love that line in terms of the way she uses her voice as an instrument, because when she does hold his breath, I can't do it myself.
Oh yeah.
She holds her breath along with the line, like throughout this, and also with when she says he always dives too soon. The way she says too soon, he always dies too soon, too fast to save himself. And like the tone of her voice dives into different notes when she's during that line.
When the actor reaches his death, you know it's not real. He just holds his breath.
Like, I like singers who, when you listen to them, you feel you believe that they believe what they're saying. Like when you listen to Kate Bush, she seems 100% invested in what she's saying. Like I love Dusty Springfield because even though she didn't write her own songs, and like Patsy Cline, those are two women who didn't write their own songs, but you hear them sing and you think like they believe every word they are saying and they are feeling every feeling of it. And with Kate Bush, the way she uses her voice as an instrument to really bring out the meaning of the words in those examples and countless times is what makes her such an incredible vocalist, I think, and an incredible artist. She's not just singing a song, she's living the song. And in the case of the breath line, she's breathing or not breathing the song.
Yeah, definitely. Because she goes, he just holds his breath.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It really
like
is.
He's, again, so literal. Like she has to literally hold her breath when she says that. She doesn't, like, we're like, Kate, we get it. He's holding his breath. But I love you. It's okay.
And speaking of that, dives too soon, too fast to save himself, will never make the screen, makes me think like, oh, this is somebody whose work and is maybe working on his craft or trying to work on his craft and nobody's paying attention. They're just like, oh, yeah, that's just another dude. Like, whatever. He's just another showbiz dude trying to make it.
Yeah.
Like all those people that moved to Los Angeles or something because, oh, we're going to get in Hollywood. We're going to make it. And they end up waiting tables for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. But she's so outside of a Hollywood context. Like when she's talking about the Sweeney, that's a British theater. Like all of this is all. I just find it so interesting that she's in the music business, but she's really writing in this song exclusively about theater.
And then for her to also include a reference to the Sweeney, like she's very British. One of the things I like about her is that she's not like British, some British singers who want to try and make it in America, so they try and flatten the way they sing so that they sound like you and me or something like that. She lets her Britishness come through. Like Sweeney, who in America is going to know about what the Sweeney is? Like,
well, that's the theme of this. That comes back to this whole album. Sorry to hit you off. Like this whole album being called Lionheart is a British nationalist symbol. I mean, just everything about this is so deeply British. And especially, no, Don't Put Your Foot on the Heart Fix comes after. But then there's Owing Lynn, My Lionheart, which is like basically a British nationalist anthem. But like, yeah, I mean, she is, I think one thing that's so interesting about her, besides her bad Bob Marley attempts on Kite and also her reggae influence on Them Heavy People and her cover of Elton John's Rocket Man, I read a theory once. There's always people speculating, why didn't she make it in America? And I think it was, might have been in Under the Ivy, where someone said, like, she basically never used any music forms that were traditionally American, such as blues, R&B, you know, gospel. Like, you have the Rolling Stones and the Beatles starting out making essentially black music, and Kate Bush doesn't. She's the whitest person ever, but... I appreciate that because I'm glad she's not appropriating cultures that aren't her own.
Right. It,
you know, like with these references, like she is so deeply British. They, you know, with Deborah Withers and Adventures in Kate Bush in Theory calls her Britain's good daughter. So many articles I read about her in the press, in British press, call her our Kate. She really, and they call her, you know, national treasure. So with all her references, they're pretty much always British. Like even in a lot of her, like in the B-side, Empty Bullring, she like with Tamsin and something, she has like references.
Oh, and, like Tamlin and her tower.
Right. She has to, it's like a British folktale thing. And also in the Kick Inside title track, it's a British folktale, Irish folktale. So she's always drawing from Celtic and British imagery and symbolism.
Definitely.
And that's something that makes her quite inaccessible to many Americans. I mean, I am part British. So that might be part of why she resonates with me. But there are plenty of Americans who aren't, who feel the same way. So
yeah,
I love that she doesn't try to do an American accent ever. I mean, she tries to do an Australian one on The Dreaming, but...
but she never tries to be something that she isn't. She's like, you know what? Y'all, this is who I am. And yeah. Yeah, we've kind of talked about the opening and closing lines of the song, how they kind of change meaning.
Yeah, it goes from something promising to something sad.
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh, well, I've worked my butt off and, oh,
I'm still alone on the stage. Yeah.
And even ends with, I mean, even the song itself, she does this little high part. Like the last thing you really hear is the echo of her voice and then a little bit of the piano. And then it's just, it's gone.
Yeah, it's like a ghostly murmur out.
Yeah. And speaking of like murmurs and things, so Emily. So the song begins, it sounds like she's saying, Emily.
Yeah, so the song, for those of you who need a refresher, the song ends with like this, in a, for her, very deep. She goes, I guess she didn't know what she was saying for ages.
Emily.
But it turns out she's saying, Emily. So some people have speculated they're referring to Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, but I really doubt. As a PhD in Kate Bush studies, I really doubt that because I like she's never self-referential in her work, so I really doubt that. So I think who Emily is always going to be, it's just an unsolved mystery. Q. Robert Stack.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm with you,
but it's weird.
Unsolved mystery, or she could have just picked it like. It sounds cool, and maybe that was just the name that popped into her head.
Very random. When I get to sit down with her and ask her about life, if I get three questions, I'll make sure one of them is who was Emily. And her answer will probably be like my mother's answer when I ask her anything about college, which is, I don't remember, I was stoned.
That is true, because she did like a lot of Mary Jane, but, you know, a lot of people... We're doing stuff back then, and I don't judge, whatever.
Yeah, she can, I'm just like, Kate, you do you.
Yeah, you just be you.
But yeah, I know you want to talk the live performances too. I think it's so interesting that, like he said, when I wrote it, I didn't envisage performing it because the song itself is about performance.
Yeah, the performance when it happened was an interpretation of the song of the words I'd already written. I first made up the visuals in a hotel room in New Zealand when I had half an hour to make up a routine and prepare for a TV show. I sat down and listened to the song through once, and the whirling seemed to fit the music. I can see with the whirling. There's something to me about the rhythm of it that I can see why she thought of like whirling, maybe like almost whirling dervishes in a way, to reference an earlier song. Yeah, she's like, oh my, you wouldn't even really know that she's 19, 20 years old at this point, because she's got, you were saying, she really does look like a drag queen. After you said that, when we were reading through the notes, I went and watched the video, I'm going, you know, it's always right. She does look like a drag queen.
It's not that she looks like a drag queen. It's that the way that like her mannerisms and everything are like, it's like as if it's are very drag. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so camp. And she's also within this song, she's using male pronouns. She's talking about she's talking about a world of show business that's occupied by men and discussing the men in those worlds. And then she has the classic line that we've discussed. He'll never make the Sweeney be that movie queen. He's too busy hitting the Vaseline.
Yep.
In her routine, she pats her butt when she says he's too busy hitting the Vaseline. And in some performances, this was considered obscene. And I can't remember which one, because there's a bunch online, but there's one that it's from Top of the Pops, but it's not. And they add like the part when she says he's hitting the Vaseline line, she hits her butt. They like make the screen dark. And like edited it out. And so the fact that she's using male pronouns and literally hitting her butt in this song is to me showing this is a world of gay men that she's depicting. And I think this is what like another reason that Lionheart is such a queer album.
Oh, definitely.
In a way that that alienates the mainstream music media press.
Mm-hmm.
But she's essentially, the visuals for the song are fascinating. As I said, she's essentially being as out of, like, over the top as possible. Like when I've shown this to friends, they're like, oh my God, she's drag queen. Like, it's just so deeply camp but she's so earnest, and that mm-hmm. and earnesty is camp. That's what the death by definition. So it's almost self-parody.
Oh yeah.
But when you watch the music video and also the Switzerland special,
mm-hmm.
I think that those actually might be like the most extreme of her performances in terms of like facial expressions and wild campiness, which It's really saying a lot. Like her facial expressions are maybe the most over the top she's ever been, which is a high bar.
Oh yeah. I think I mentioned this before during the Feel It episode, that her face is so expressive.
Yeah.
She's not afraid to open her mouth and just like use the extremes of her face. It is very theatrical. It feels like something that would be done in a stage show to make sure that the audience can see you. In fact, that's
what she does. Yeah.
Like William Shatner, for example, William Shatner gets made fun of because of his very stilted way of talking. But that comes from his days in theater, because you had to talk like that to make sure that people could understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And so that's a similar thing with her facial expressions. Oh, I'm with you. Like, in this performance is very wow, if you will.
Well, I think part of why she does that is exactly what you're saying. She's been quoted numerous times early in her career saying, and she did this again Before the Dawn, if I perform, I'm going to give 110%. I'm not just going to sit there mm-hmm. and sing. I'm going to give people a show. And to her, with her interest in theater, that means, as you said, like performing with gestures and facial expressions that have to be like telegraphed to the all the way back of the room, mm-hmm. you know, like a theater actor. And she, to me, like when I am a film buff, and I always, when I watch her videos, think of what an amazing silent film actor she would have been, like a Lillian Gish.
Because oh, definitely.
She's just so expressive. Yes, she would have been such a great silent film star, I think, born in the wrong era. I think that's also what makes her such a gay icon and camp icon, is that she's always performing like a theater performer, as mm-hmm. if like she needs to show her emotions, as if she's like performing for an audience of 10,000 and needs the people in the back to see when it's a music video.
And so she performed that in Switzerland, and after that performance, the song shot up to number 14 in the UK. Mm-hmm. She performed it at the San Remo Festival in Italy, that mm-hmm. aired in February 1979. She's wearing that I love her the purple dress. I love to sew.
Me too.
And so I look at her stuff and I go, well, that's got like ruching there, and that's got some embroidery. And I love that dress.
I know. And it sucks because I know the wow routine, but I can't, when I do my Kate impersonation act, I can't really I've done it with my white Wuthering Heights dress, but I want the purple dress.
So she was wearing this beautiful purple dress. It looks like it was the same dress as she was wearing for the Tour of Life.
Oh, she wears the same things over and over, and that is one of the reasons I love her. Like, she was photographed at her fan convention in 1985 wearing something I saw a picture of her wearing in 1978. Like, I love it.
And
she reuses all the same stuff.
She does the whirly arm choreography that she'd done before at all the other festivals. She did the booty pat. Oh, she performed this on Top of the Pops. Of course, that was lip sync. Actually, all of those were lip synced except for the Tour of Life one.
Because she didn't have because she had the microphone for Tour of Life.
Yeah.
No, I love her Tour of Life. As I made note, mm-hmm. I just love that she's this 20. At that point, she's 20 because Tour of Life's in the spring, and I'm enough of a nerd to know her birthday is July 30th. So, she was 20, and she has these two shirtless men at her feet, just doing her bidding.
I know.
It's so badass. I love it.
Indeed.
But I definitely prefer the video version and the 1979 ABBA Switzerland special version the best.
Especially having the guys from ABBA introducing her too.
and the way they do it, of course they have to talk about her looks. They say, whose voice is amazing? Whose looks are amazing? Like, just people, I think, because now she has gained such prestige, and rightfully so, people forget that she was so deeply sexualized at that time. People really only saw her as a pair of boobs with a high voice.
And now, whose dancing is amazing?
And whose looks are amazing?
Whose voice is amazing?
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Is it a tree?
No, it's a bush.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Kate Bush.
So, yeah, I love the live performance from the Tour of Life. She doesn't tour the way that most other artists do. So I like seeing her do stuff actually live because she does it so infrequently. And she hits this song. Yeah. She's pitch perfect and everything. Like, the fact that she was able to sing this song and pretty much everything from her first two albums except for Oh, To Be in Love and include some new songs, she sang a night after night, and she was pitch perfect every time. And she has some hard songs to sing. Was able to do it. It's just, wow. Indeed, unbelievable.
Watch it. It is ridiculous and it is a delight, and teach yourself all the moves, and after a few shots of liquid courage you will find yourself doing them.
Indeed. I find myself doing them even when sober.
Well, I used to have like a lot of back pain, so like I would do the arm swings. So I would just be like, I'm channeling Kate, because like that's supposed to be good for back pain.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, like this is the music video for this. So this is probably what now the fourth total music video that she'd even released in her career. Mm-hmm. And at this point, MTV wasn't even around.
No.
And in the musical Chairs documentary where they talk about making the video, it's neat to hear the producers and the directors talking about like the future of music and how they thought that the future of music was going to be listening to an album and then you have the visuals to go with it. It didn't quite end up quite that way, but it's, you know, an interesting, like, you thought that this was going to happen in the future.
I mean, yet again, an example of her doing things before everyone else that was. There's on her early videos, there's a pattern of it's usually her against kind of a stark background doing an elaborate dance routine. And like watched this music video for Single Ladies by Beyonce. What is it? Her against the dark background doing a elaborate dance routine. Like, Kate really set a template. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the VMAs should never, like, why do the VMAs exist when the best video of all time was released in 1981 with Babushka? Like, why, okay, why do you even need that? Like, she did everything before, like, MTV. It's fascinating. Like, she, like, this template of women artists kind of just doing a dance routine is something that she started. They weren't doing it for, I mean, you had girl groups who were kind of like swaying a little, but the whole like elaborate dance routine, she really started. And then Madonna took to a different level. So Kate's level is more like, I mean, ridiculous, like lovably ridiculous, but ridiculous.
So let's see, there actually aren't any really any, the only other version of this song is the single version, which just goes straight into the like the opening synthesizer chords are cut out. I don't like that. I like that the album version has those chords because it reminds me of an orchestra warming up. It takes me back to like my band days. You know, we were always playing like, okay, we got to play this warm-up chord here. Hey! And it goes into the, you know, the theatricality of it and having, you have your live band while the musical and everything is going on. But yeah, it's really just the single version that's where you have the opening synthesizer chords that are not there. And then there's the album version. And I mean, no demo versions to speak of.
Which is interesting, because if it was written earlier, it's surprising there's not a demo version, since there is for a lot of her other songs that were written earlier.
I did read that for, as far as like other versions, that apparently they went through miles and miles of tape recording her vocals on this song. Like,
wow.
Yeah, that they, when they were, came to recording the vocals, it was a very, and it was unbelievable too. Like, it took, they spent hours and hours just having her re-record vocals because she felt like every time she sang it that, no, there's just not something there. Even though everybody else in the control room, they're going, Kate, it sounded amazing. They're just going, no, it doesn't have that, quite have that thing. So they ended up splicing together like hundreds of different takes of her doing this song. Yeah. Because she was just, no, it has to be, I want to capture that feeling, and I don't feel like I've captured that feeling. And I would love to hear what some of those other takes were, but yeah, that's probably not going to be leaking out anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I would love to hear them too. But I love in the documentary about the Tour of Life, which any fans should watch, just Google Kate Bush Tour of Life documentary on YouTube and you'll find it. Like, they show her rehearsing Wow, and it's really great to hear those sounds coming out of her mouth. Because you never ever again get candid behind the scenes footage of her rehearsing. So
no, you don't.
Yeah.
And I know she likes to try and keep things very private and not show a lot of her kind of the more raw side, but I like seeing that. I like seeing how things are being made. I like knowing that it didn't just randomly appear, that there was work to be done on it.
Yeah.
So I would say that this episode is pretty wow. What do you think? Would you think it was unbelievable and wow too?
I'd say more like unbelievable.
Or more like wow.
Yeah. But this song is amazing.
Yes.
Lionheart. This song. Yeah. Oh, again, a song that's a lyric that's involved in the song. It's wow, unbelievable, amazing. Just like the person who created it. Thank you, Kate Bush, for existing.
I know. We love you, Kate. You're awesome.
Yeah, and thank you for this song is such a portal into Lionheart's very strange and theatrical and queer heart, you know? And I really appreciate that.
Indeed. And thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on this episode with me. It was so awesome to talk to you. Yay.
Oh, my pleasure. Yay. We got to have more gays talking, Kate.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up, but thank you for having me.
Yep. Indeed. Thanks so much for being on the show. I look forward to talking with you for some more Lionheart songs.
You're welcome.
If you have a favorite Kate Bush song that you would love to talk about on a future episode with me, please email me at kbcast@linkmedia.com. That's link with an E. You can also find me on Twitter at StrangeKateCast. And on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast. I want to hear from you. Remember, part of why I'm doing this podcast is to connect with other Kate fans and so we can nerd about Kate Bush, because she's got a lot of stuff in all her different songs. So feel free to hit me up on those, email, Twitter, or Facebook. I would love to hear from you. And also, if you know something about this week's song that we didn't get to, we haven't already talked about, I'm going to do a retrospective episode from songs from the album after this season is done, so you can feel free to hit me up there. See everybody next week. Well, and it didn't help those pictures, that the first pictures that were sent out of her to everybody that plastered on the London buses. Oh, it's her. You can see her nipple and everything. So,
well, it's hilarious with those, because in interviews, she always says, I didn't think those were sexual at all. I just thought that the look on my face conveyed a lot of emotion. Like, she didn't, she didn't even notice. She did not notice that her nipples were there. Mm-hmm. They were all there's this innocence. Well, there's not. She's deeply carnal in her lyrics, especially on the Kick Inside album, deeply mm-hmm. sexual. But there also is this naivete where she's I didn't think people would ever see me as a sex symbol, because I thought they would be looking at the expression in my eyes and not at my nipples.
No, that's not the way it works. It's never the way it works.
For what it's worth, I care more about the expression in her eyes, but whatever.
Yeah.
The guy who interviewed her, who talked about masturbating to pictures of her right before talking to her, he didn't care.
That's just, you interviewing Kate Bush and you tell her, oh yeah, I used to jerk off to pictures of you. Really?
It was before. It was a pre-taste thing.
Oh, okay.
And then it goes into the interview. Yeah.
But still, you don't say that to somebody. Ooh. Anyway.
He's on my wedding list. Let's put it that way. For those of you who are not, Kate Bush has a song called The Wedding List on her next album, Never Forever, where she has a list of people to kill. So, wedding
almost list. Like Kill Bill, but except I know the inspiration for that song was not Kill Bill, but I think of Kill Bill every time I hear that song.
Well, the inspiration for that song is The Bride Wore Black, which Kill Bill is a 100% ripoff of. And I'm happy to guest on that episode because I know a lot about Francois Truffaut, who directed The Bride Wore Black.
Mm-hmm.
But so it is Kill Bill, basically, because Kill Bill is The Bride Wore Black.
Yeah.
But when someone pisses me off in my head, I'm like, I'll put you on wedding list.
And you'll get them and you will not miss.
Hopefully.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshouses.com. glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.